The November lockdown is not extended beyond December 2nd. After the severe blow dealt it by the first lockdown, the British economy bounced back by 15.5% in the July to September period. But the worry is that it will shrink again over the winter months. Weak household spending is being blamed for the UK's poor GDP performances.
The unemployment rate in the UK is continuing to surge, and redundancy rates are at an all-time high. Millions of Britons are struggling to make ends meet, and millions more are saving their pennies for even rainier days.
I'm quite happy with what the Chancellor has done. Of course, everybody is, and everybody won't be when they talk about how to get these monies back. I mean, he's talked about cutting duty-free. People are complaining about that.
Concerned, very concerned about the younger people in particular, because of unemployment, because of the huge debt there's going to be. It's a massive, massive worry. And I don't think we've seen how bad it's going to be yet.
Yeah. I think the situation with Brexit is complete shambles. You know, the government doesn't seem to have a grip on it, just as it doesn't seem to have a grip on the COVID epidemic. I mean, it's terribly worrying. I mean, I've got two sons, both who work in hospitality, and they're worried stiff about what's going to happen.
The extension of the furlough scheme might help encourage spending. The government will now be paying 80% of the salaries of workers retained by firms rather than fired until March. Britain's manufacturing sector will be getting a massive tax break extension as well. But according to the Bank of England, things will get worse before they get better. It predicts the UK's GDP could shrink by 2% in the October-December quarter, and its economy is likely to shrink by a record 11% in 2020, before growing by just 7% in 2021. But did the UK have this coming despite COVID-19?
The present situation started a year ago, last September, when the banks began to refuse to lend money to each other, and there was a panic in the banking system. Now, that is always the first sign of a coming huge economic collapse. It always happens about a year or two before the actual collapse. The debt levels have built up to be completely unrepayable. The rich-poor division has increased, and the type of jobs coming into existence due to the technological shift are now temporary and part-time.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Director of Communications, Lee Kane, has quit, and now his top advisor, Dominic Cummings, has left as well. Some say this will make for smoother Brexit talks, due to resume this week before an EU summit on Thursday. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The British Labour Party has found itself entangled in yet another racism crisis after a new report found huge levels of Islamophobia within the party. The report, commissioned by the newly formed Labour Muslim Network, suggests that current party leader Sir Keir Starmer has greatly lost the trust of his party's Muslim members. Just some of the damning results claim that
more than one in four Muslim members and supporters have experienced Islamophobia within party ranks. 59% say they do not feel well represented by the leadership. 55% claim they don't even trust the leadership to tackle Islamophobia effectively, while 46% feel the party doesn't represent the community effectively.
In response to the report, I reached out to British Muslims who have already decided to quit the party to ask why they felt they had to leave.
And from the people I've met, the councillors I've experienced, the talking I've had, conversations, prior to even Keir Starmer's appointment, there was a problem within the Labour Party. Once he came into his position, it just reinforced everything that we were already saying that is happening and existing. And this was the reason for my exodus and the large exodus by my community.
The report, which interviewed hundreds of British Muslim members, added that some key policy issues create hurt amongst Muslims, including its stance on Israeli crimes in Palestine and Starmer's U-turn on Labour's Kashmir policy earlier this year.
Leave the Labour Party, cut off your cards, and let your friends and family know that this is what's happening, and Keir Starmer shouldn't be able to silently still get our vote and then still implement these ways Labour is a failed system. Labour is a crumbling system, and Labour is not something that will represent us as British Muslims who live in the UK now. You know, it's just not. And Keir Starmer, I would sincerely hope that you would consider your position on the Kashmir issue.
Before Starmer took over, the party was rocked by the anti-Semitism crisis for many years. Some even argue it's what brought down the previous leadership. But the question is, will the response be the same to this blatant crisis of Islamophobia within the party? Many are arguing not. Robert Carter, London.
Once again, the violent clashes. The police tear gassed protesters to disperse them in Pakistan's garrison city of Rawalpindi near capital Islamabad. Nonetheless, a massive crowd emerged on the streets despite chilly weather conditions. At the heart of an intense public anger is the display of a blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet of the Islam by the French government on state-run buildings last month. Since then, there has been no let-up to the protest like this in Pakistan. The frequent publications, newspapers, and public display of anti-Islamic blasphemous cartoons have ignited an unprecedented scale of public resentment against France and its citizens in Pakistan. Protesters vowed to avenge the blasphemers of the Prophet of the Islam.
The honor of our Prophet is being insulted by the President of France. We demand the government official to kick out the ambassador of France right now from the Pakistan. Otherwise, these all people will protest. We will march in millions towards the embassy of France. We will march in millions, inshallah.
Being here in this weather, in this condition, against the government of France, against the officials, who they are not kicking the France ambassador from the Pakistan, why we are here to protect our respect of our holy Prophet Muhammad Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. No one can stop us to protect the our own religion, over the respect of our holy Prophet Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
Pakistan's mainstream media largely opted to black out the coverage of this protest, allegedly under pressure to contain the agitation on this most sensitive issue. The organizers complain that their large number of protesters were arrested to prevent them to participate in the gathering. The government suspended all cell phone services and blocked all major highways to prevent the entry of angry protesters in the capital city. The extraordinary security measures have been undertaken to avert the repetition of violent clashes happened not far from French embassy in Islamabad in early this month. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
It seems the growing number of coronavirus infections and death has not yet sounded the alarm in Turkey's government offices to impose another lockdown in the country. The reluctance comes amid reports that the flow of tourists is still going strong in Turkey amid the pandemic, especially in its largest city of Istanbul, which has not only the highest number of tourists, but also the highest number of coronavirus infections and death. The city counts for about 40% of confirmed infected cases in Turkey. This number forced the mayor of Istanbul, Ekrem İmamoğlu, to call on the government to impose a total lockdown in the city for at least 2 to 3 weeks. However, his call was rejected.
When we look at the current data, it is obvious that a lockdown is absolutely necessary. I have shared this issue with all the authorities and people of Istanbul. I think a 2 to 3 week lockdown is necessary. This is highly advised by our scientists and experts.
Many believe that the government's decision is deeply rooted in its economic concerns. The government officials maintain that the closure of restaurants and public places at 10 p.m., along with social distancing and wearing masks, is enough to contain the virus.
The second wave of the coronavirus is spreading all over the world, and the situation is getting worse. Many governments may consider lockdown as an effective way to cope with the pandemic, but lockdown has its own consequences. Many people will lose their jobs, and it seems the Turkish government is now mainly concerned with the economic aspects of the lockdown.
Turkey's Cultural and Tourism Ministry announced last week that since the end of the last lockdown several months ago, the country has had 9.46 million visitors from various countries, including European ones, where the pandemic has hit the most. Those arriving to Turkey are not even being tested, which makes the spread of the virus even easier. Many here say Turkish government is favoring economy over public health. Now, the main question is how far the government may remain reluctant to meet the growing demands for lockdown as the country's coronavirus infections and death are getting out of control. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
The Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela has strongly rejected a round of one-year-long sanctions fired by the European Union, which challenges the legitimacy of the upcoming legislative elections in the Latin American nation. Nicolas Maduro made the remarks after the EU's European Council condemned a decision by the Supreme Court of Venezuela to reshuffle the composition of the country's National Electoral Council. Maduro said the move by the European body is influenced by the regime change policy of the United States, which refuses to recognize Maduro's presidency and the country's legal institutions. The Venezuelan head of state said the elections will take place despite the economic sanctions because they follow the rule of the national constitution. Officials totally back Maduro's statement.
The EU sanctions are a violation of international law and therefore we absolutely repudiate them. From a different perspective, many opposition members justify the EU policy.
From a different perspective, many opposition members justify the EU policy. However, experts say the EU sanctions are unfounded and influenced by Washington.
The EU is mistaken in politically following the US meddlesome policy. The truth is, most political parties are running in these legislative elections.
Despite the aggression by the EU, the government of Venezuela says Maduro will go on as the country's president and parliamentary elections will be held this year because Venezuela is a free country and it won't be brought to its knees by foreign sanctions. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
In a somber silence, France marked 5 years since the November 15 attacks. 130 people were killed in what is the country's deadliest peacetime attack. Takfiri extremists linked to Daesh claimed responsibility for the attack as a response to France's military involvement in Syria and Iraq. Prime Minister Jean Castex led the commemorations as France finds itself in the midst of more Takfiri extremism and growing Islamophobia, polarizing the population. In the past few weeks, Takfiri extremists have killed 4 people after a series of Islamophobic statements from President Emmanuel Macron, as well as the overt promotion of blasphemous cartoons of Prophet Muhammad. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan also condemned Macron's rhetoric.
It is an issue of honor for us to stand against the attacks against our Prophet who honored the entire world. The West are once again heading for a period of barbarity. France and Europe in general, they don't deserve the policies of Macron and those with similar mindsets that spread seeds of hate.
French Muslim leaders have condemned all forms of violence and have called for restraint. France is also calling for a crackdown of foreign funding that it says stokes extremist sentiments. But wide-ranging condemnation of the entire Muslim community by politicians has only deepened divisions. Yesterday, France hosted the Paris Peace Forum, where leaders discussed the ongoing threat of extremism.
No one can say when the pandemic will stop, nor when terrorism will be vanquished. So we cannot wait. We must lead the fight back and build structures that will allow us to better foresee these global threats.
The 2015 attacks shocked the world and damaged relations between communities. President Macron has since tried to dampen emotions, but France remains at a crossroads. Any further Islamophobic sentiments will only flame the tensions.
Trump and his fellow Republicans keep insisting that the U.S. presidential election was rigged, calling for a recount of ballots in several key states. Trump and his team have filed several lawsuits contesting the outcome of the election. However, they have suffered legal setbacks in three battleground states, namely Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Arizona. Courts there rejected Republicans' call for probing the vote count process and blocking mail-in ballots. Meanwhile, U.S. prosecutors have asked Attorney General William Barr to rescind a memo that instructed them to publicly investigate allegations of vote counting irregularities. The prosecutors say they have not seen any unusual activity. Barr sent his memo after days of attacks on the integrity of the election by President Donald Trump and his Republican allies. Although Trump has refused to concede defeat, he said in recent remarks that time will tell which administration will take office in the White House in January.
Whatever happens in the future, who knows which administration it will be? I guess time will tell.
The remarks are the first indication that Trump could concede defeat in the disputed November 3rd presidential election. Still, some of Trump's supporters, as well as his fellow Republicans, are refusing to budge and remain hopeful that their candidate still has the chance to become the next president. The controversy over the election results comes against the backdrop of pro- and anti-Trump demonstrations. Trump supporters back his vote-rigging claims, while his opponents are happy with the projected victory of Joe Biden. Nevertheless, experts believe the nature of the U.S. regime will not change no matter who takes the reign at the White House.
What we're seeing is that the people who control both parties, the Democrats and Republicans, they want Trump out. You know, Trump is not perfect by any means. He's actually really bad for the American people. But the one thing that we can all give him credit is that he exposed the reality of the U.S. empire. He showed just how brutal it is. And I think for a lot of people on Wall Street and Washington who want to rebrand U.S. empire, Trump is too dangerous. And it's looking every day like Trump may be forced to concede.
Now, it remains to be seen who will be confirmed in office as the next U.S. president and whether or not there will be any major policy changes in the new administration.
On September 17, a resolution issued by the European Parliament urged EU member states to impose an arms embargo on Saudi Arabia over the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the Yemen war. The resolution also contained an arms embargo on Cairo and Ankara, motivated by concerns Europeans' arms and military equipment might be used for internal repression in Egypt, and that Turkey's conduct in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea would run counter to the sovereignty of any EU member state. While some EU countries such as Germany, Finland, and Denmark have adopted restrictions on the arms exports to Riyadh, Italy and other EU nations have ignored the resolution in full so far.
It's unacceptable that Egypt, a country known for human rights abuses, is the top importer of Italian weapons across the world. Saudi Arabia follows. We can't accept that countries involved in wars continue to receive our military equipment. Unfortunately, Italy hasn't done much since the EU Parliament adopted the resolution.
An Italian government report has found that the Unit for the Authorizations of Armament Materials green-lighted 57 times last year the supply of military systems, including bombs, torpedoes, rocket launchers and missiles, worth about 200 million euros to Saudi Arabia and UAE.
One in four arms sold worldwide in 2019 were produced in Europe, according to a report by CIPRI, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. France and Germany topped the list of European countries that trade in arms, while Italy came third.
We often look at the US as the main arms supplier worldwide. However, we forget that Europe also plays a major role. If the European Parliament only issues resolutions and not directives, all those countries not observing arms embargo cannot be sanctioned. Furthermore, there is a lack of political will among EU countries for change. European companies even compete with one another to sell more arms in conflicting countries.
Consecutive Italian governments have also ignored a domestic law passed in 1990 which bans the exports of weapons in countries in a state of war. Italy's arms exports stood at over 5 billion euros in 2019. Max Civili, Rome.
The United States presidential election continues to be unfinished and disputed. Democrat Joe Biden holds a slim lead, but President Donald Trump has significant public support from Republicans at the grassroots and elite levels to not concede. The election was preceded by months of controversy regarding the unprecedented use of mail-in ballots, which appeared to swing the election in the slight favor of Joe Biden at the last minute. A recent poll showed that a whopping 70% of Republicans do not believe the election was free and fair. Polls held just prior to the vote showed just half the number of Republican skeptics. Democrats say vote fraud has not yet been proven and that Trump must concede to prevent increasing distrust towards the nation's electoral process. But this is the third disputed election in the last six tries. Many are insisting that this election must be judicially vetted in order to prevent even more alienation, apathy, abstention, and anger. Others say the economic, social, and health disaster caused by the coronavirus makes this not the year to insist on transparency.
Six elections, that's my entire lifetime. So one in two of elections in my lifetime, and only I've been able to only vote in the last, I think, three of them. Or four of them. That says a lot about people's uncertainty of these elections, and that's just only going to grow if the system remains how it is.
The repeated electoral chaos is likely to undermine perpetual U.S. claims that their model of democracy is not only the best, but should be emulated around the world. Harvard ranked U.S. election integrity just 57th in the world. And that was last year.
This is not a model of a political system that would want to be mimicked. And it would only be mimicked if it's being used by the powerful. It would only be mimicked by them because they want something that undermines a majority view. And yeah, you should reject that entirely. If you really are for the small d democracy, if you're really for that, you would reject the American model of electing presidents.
The corporate-dominated U.S. mainstream media appears to have a united front that Biden won the election and that any legal challenges are frivolous. A significant percentage of over 70 million Trump voters don't appear to agree. Weeks of chaos and tensions appear certain as the Electoral College, the vote which actually decides the U.S. president, doesn't meet until December 14th. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
The first type of right that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam speaks about in his treatise is the right of God, the right of Allah, Haqqullah.
For Humanity, a commentary on Risalatul Huquq of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam
by Tahir Reza Jafar.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين. Welcome to another episode of For Humanity, a program in which we look at the Treatise of Rights or Risalatul Huquq from our fourth Imam, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. This treatise is a beautiful compilation of the rights of all the creatures and how we should treat them and fulfill their rights. Each has been explained in summary so that it is easy for the believers to go through the rites and understand them. And as we look at the Risalatul Huquq and we study it, we find that indeed it is a beautiful ethical text that, if acted upon, can really improve the lives of all human beings, let alone the believers. And so what we are currently looking at in this particular section is the right of our fellow believers, or as put in Arabic, حق أهل ملتك, the right of the one who follows your creed. And so we have been discussing what the Imam alayhi salam has outlined as the rights of our fellow believers. And we discussed in the previous episode what is meant by a believer, a mu'min, who is a believer. And we have seen that the Imam alayhi salam begins his discussion on the rights of a believer by saying that the first and most important right is that a person should harbor positive feelings and should be a well-wisher towards believers, meaning that there should not be any negative and malicious feelings or hatred in the heart for any believer. Then the Imam alayhi salam proceeds to tell us how to treat those amongst the believers who have strayed and who have become sinners. He tells us that we should treat them with kindness and gentleness, and that is the way in which we can then reform them and guide them back to the straight path. The third point that the Imam alayhi salam mentions, which is very important, is how we should wish for believers what we wish for ourselves. This is part of the golden rule, which is famously known, that we should do unto others what we want them to do unto us. However, here it is a little bit deeper than that, because the Imam alayhi salam is telling us that we should have an ardent desire and wish in our hearts for the believers to attain and acquire that which we wish and pray for ourselves. And this is something which goes even beyond the scope of the Golden Rule, because the Golden Rule only talks about day-to-day mundane actions. What we want from others, we should do to them so that we find some reciprocity and get the same kind of behavior in return. However, when it comes to the believers, it is something far deeper. In fact, we are told that if we want something for ourselves, one of the best ways of getting it is to desire that for the fellow believers. So for example, in a beautiful hadith from our sixth Imam, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, من قدم أربعين رجلا من إخوانه فدعا ثم دعا لنفسه استجيب له فيهم وفي نفسه. Whoever mentions 40 believers and prays for them before he supplicates for himself, Allah Azza wa Jal will answer his prayer for them and for himself. So you see here, this is a beautiful example of how praying for your fellow believers and wishing something good for them enables your own supplication for yourself to be accepted by Allah Azza wa Jal. This is something very important for us to consider and to remember. In another beautiful hadith from Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam, this time he says, من دعا لإخوانه من المؤمنين وكل الله به عن كل مؤمن ملكا يدعو له. Whoever prays and supplicates to Allah for his believing brothers, Allah appoints for every believer he prays for, Allah appoints an angel to pray for him. That means if you supplicate to Allah for your believing brothers, wishing for them that which is good, that which you wish for yourself, for each person you pray for, Allah will appoint an angel to pray for you, to supplicate for you. So if you supplicate for 50 believers, then Allah has appointed 50 angels to do dua on your behalf. What a beautiful hadith. Then in another hadith from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, we find that he mentions that the Holy Prophet himself has said, لَيْسَ شَيْءٌ أَسْرَعْ إِجَابَةً مِنْ دُعَاءِ غَائِبٍ لِغَائِبٍ. There is nothing that is accepted by Allah Azza wa Jal quicker than the supplication of one for his brother who is absent from him. So imagine if you are seated in one corner of the world and you pray for your brother who is seated in another corner of the world. You supplicate for your believing brother in another part of the world. That is the supplication which is quickest in being accepted by Allah Azza wa Jal, according to the Prophet himself. And so when Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam tells us that the third right of a fellow believer is that we should wish for them and pray for them that which we wish for ourselves and pray for ourselves, the beautiful consequence of this is not only that we strengthen the bonds of brotherhood amongst the believers, but also that our own supplications are accepted and answered quicker by Allah Azza wa Jal, because we supplicate for the believers before we supplicate for ourselves. And this is the beautiful benefit of this particular action. We pray to Allah Azza wa Jal to grant us the ability to pray for our believing brothers. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, what you've just listened to was the program For Humanity. If you have any comments or suggestions, email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
O mountains of Mecca, bear witness that I to the oneness of Allah do I testify. For all that He's given me, how can I deny? My purpose in life should be only to cry. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. There is no God but Allah. Muhammad is His messenger. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. There is no God but Allah. Muhammad is His messenger.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The U.S. military-industrial complex and the surveillance state have always had a cozy relationship with tech. Buying bulk data in order to profile Muslims is par for the course for them and is absolutely sickening. It should be illegal, tweeted Representative Ilhan Omar in reaction to the recent revelation that the U.S. military is attaining data from mobile phone applications. Dear listeners, stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jessica Corbett Ryder. This article is published under the heading Absolutely Sickening, U.S. Military Buys Location Data Harvested from Apps, including one for Muslim prayers. Here's the details of this article. Holy hell, this is absolutely unacceptable, quite wild, grotesque, absolutely sickening. This should be illegal. Those were just some of the alarmed reactions to reporting by Joseph Cox for Motherboard on Monday, November 16th, that the U.S. military is buying the movement data of people around the world harvested from innocuous-seeming applications. The most popular app among a group motherboard analyzed connected to this sort of data sale is a Muslim prayer and Quran app that has more than 98 million downloads worldwide, the report continues. Others included a Muslim dating app, a popular Greatless app, an app for falling storms, and a level app that can be used to help, for example, install shelves in a bedroom. Representatives Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib were the first two Muslim women elected to Congress, and Omar was the first to wear a hijab. Omar tweeted on Monday, November 16th, that the U.S. military-industrial complex and the surveillance state have always had a cozy relationship with tech. Buying bulk data in order to profile Muslims is par for the course for them and is absolutely sickening. It should be illegal. Omar was far from alone in expressing outrage over the revelation that the U.S. military is attaining data from mobile phone applications. According to Motherboard, its expose is the first to reveal that the controversial practice of purchasing such information isn't limited to U.S. law enforcement, but also extends to the military. As the report explains, through public records, interviews with developers, and technical analysis, Motherboard uncovered two separate parallel data streams that the U.S. military uses or has used to obtain location data. One relies on a company called Babel Street, which creates a product called LocateX. U.S. Special Operations Command, a branch of the military tasked with counterterrorism, counterinsurgency, and special reconnaissance, bought access to LocateX to assist on overseas special forces operations. The other stream is through a company called XMode, which obtains location data directly from apps, then sells that data to contractors and, by extension, the military. The news highlights the opaque location data industry and the fact that the U.S. military, which has infamously used other location data to target drone strikes, is purchasing access to sensitive data. Many of the users of apps involved in the data supply chain are Muslim, which is notable considering that the United States of America has waged a decades-long war on predominantly Muslim groups in West Asia region and has killed hundreds of thousands of civilians during its military operations in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iraq. While the board does not know of any specific operations in which this type of app-based location data has been used by the U.S. military. Some critics directed their ire in part at the companies behind the apps named in the report, including Muslim Pro, which reminds users when to pray and the direction Mecca from their current location and includes passages and audio readings from Quran, as well as the dating app Muslim Mingle. Both apps send data to X mode. Both Muslim Pro and Mingle didn't respond to Motherboard's request for comment. Senator Ron Wyden told the outlet that in a September call with my office, lawyers for the data broker Xmode Social confirmed that the company is selling data collected from phones in the United States of America to U.S. military customers via defense contractors. Citing non-disclosure agreements, the company refused to identify the specific defense contractors or the specific government agencies buying the data. The Trusted Partners section of Xmode's website previously listed as customers the contractors Sierra Nevada Corporation and Systems Technology Research, but simple company names have been removed from the page as Wyden's office and Motherboard have conducted investigations, according to the news outlet, which noted that multiple app developers who work with Xmode said they didn't know their users' location data was shared with military contractors. Xmode told Motherboard by email that it does not work with Sierra Nevada or STR, but didn't deny they had been customers. Neither of the companies responded to requests for comment. Xmode also said it licenses its data panel to a small number of technology companies that may work with government military services. But our work with such contractors is international and primarily focused on three use cases: cybersecurity, counterinsurgency, and predicting future COVID-19 hotspots. While Babel Street also didn't reply to Motherboard's request for comment, Navy Commander Tim Hawkins, a USSOCOM spokesperson, confirmed the LocateX purchase and told the outlet, "Our access to the software is used to support a Special Operations Forces mission requirements overseas. We strictly adhere to established procedures and policies for protecting the privacy, civil liberties, constitutional and legal rights of American citizens." Wolfie Crystal, a researcher, writer, and digital rights activist at Cracked Labs in Austria, called Motherboard's investigation so far the most comprehensive report on how all kinds of mobile apps share or sell location data with data brokers, who in turn sell it to U.S. military and defense contractors, all without the user's knowledge. "The mobile app ecosystem is totally broken," Crystal added. Matteo Gargiulo, a policy analyst at the Electronic Frontier Foundation working on surveillance and privacy, joined those weighing in on the report via Twitter by writing that law enforcement and government have always had an "if the data is out there, we want it" approach. If there are apps or companies that think they can make a quick buck by selling data you shared with them, Gargiulo added, they will always find a buyer in the government.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه السلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother, I'm Muhammad. And today, I'm going to read to you an aphorism of Imam Ali from Nahjul Balagha. Before that, let's go ahead and listen to the Arabic words, and after that, I'm going to read you the English translation. Stay with us.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام وعجبا أتكون الخلافة بالصحابة ولا تكون بالصحابة والقرابة
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "How strange! Could the caliphate be through the Prophet's companionship, but not through his companionship and his kinship?"
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. So, dear friends, one of the great lessons which we learn from the truly universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is this concept about being moderate between worldliness and religiousness, as well as having a conduct that is that of a peacemaker. Allahu Akbar. We find that in the government of Imam Ali alayhi salam, when all of the Muslims came and unanimously agreed upon the caliphate of Imam Ali, we find that in his government, Imam Ali wanted such men who were able to be moderate between worldliness and religiousness with the same spirit as the Holy Prophet had. So of course, Imam Ali alayhi salam brought people into the government. He brought people into the forefront, people such as Ammar Yasir and Salman al-Muhammadi, Salman al-Farsi, and people like Abu Dhar Ghaffari, Malik Ashtar. These were the kind of people that Imam Ali alayhi salam brought to the forefront in his government. Of course, these people were moderate between worldliness and religiousness. And so what exactly does this mean? Well, of course, brothers and sisters, we need to be moderate between worldliness and religiousness, meaning that we should work in the world, we should earn wealth in the world, we should be educated in the world, we should be able to provide for our families in this world. Of course, with the end goal of being the satisfaction of Allah. And at the same time, we need to be religious. We cannot sacrifice one for the other. Of course, if it came down to it, we would need to sacrifice our worldliness for our religiousness, as that is the way. So Imam Ali in his government, he was looking for these kind of people. And this is one of the lessons which we learn, is to be moderate between worldliness and religiousness. For surely Islam is a moderate religion. It is a religion that is in the middle of the path. It is on neither extremes. And finally, Imam Ali alayhi salam wanted people in his government, and therefore wants us to be people who direct people towards the right path, towards the path of God, towards the path of the Quran, towards the path of nobility and righteousness. And of course, he always wanted his government officials to have conduct such that of peacemakers. They wanted to make peace across the land. They did not want to create discord and fitna. Very profound lessons brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
وقتی شخصیت امیرالمومنین رو بشناسی در مقابل او خضوع میکند.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Today I would like to focus on examples from non-Muslims who admire the sermons of Amir al-Mu'mineen, especially when it comes to Nahj al-Balagha. And we are talking about the non-Muslims of the present day. The example, as far as you know, non-Muslim entity is concerned, those who appreciated the wisdom of Amir al-Mu'mineen even after 14 centuries is the United Nations Organization. In the year 2002, UN actually issued a report regarding the Middle East. The title was Liberating Human Capabilities, and the subtitle of that report is Governance, Human Development, and the Arab World. So they have a survey of, you know, how the Arab societies work. And then they have solutions there, recommendations of what they should do. And just so that the Arabs don't feel bad about it, that, you know, UN is saying we should follow the example of the West, they actually say you don't need to go here and there for the example. They said you go back to your own history and look at the example of your Caliph Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. It's irony that the Arab world is being told to follow the example of Ali by United Nations. And in that actual report, in one area, they have a box where they have actual excerpts from the letter that Amir al-Mu'mineen wrote to Malik Ashtar about, you know, the principles of governance. Of course, they haven't put everything there, but main important points there. And so this is important to realize that even now, when people look at the history of Islam, you know, the example of Amir al-Mu'mineen, his words, his ideas, and his example basically is still a guidance and light for the people in the modern times. And this is where I would say, you know, this is a challenge for us, the Shias. Shouldn't we be ahead of all others in studying Nahj al-Balagha? Think about it.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
www.parstoday.com/en